Hello and welcome to the Unbundled Attorney Mastermind Podcast. My name is Dave Ahrens and I'm the co-founder and CEO of Unbundled Attorney. In this podcast, we interview many of our provider attorneys, as well as some of the leading experts in the industry to isolate the best practices for building internet-generated leads and how to ethically and effectively offer unbundled legal services and other more affordable options in your practice. For more information about our services, visit www.unbundledattorney.com. All right, welcome to the show. It has been a incredible journey thus far in the development of this podcast. We're, I think, 42 episodes in. I think it's the 42nd episode we're releasing here. It's going to be with Robert Buchanan, one of our provider attorneys out of Chicago, Illinois. But I think it's a good place to take a pause, and I'd love to get some feedback from you on what's been going, what you love about the podcast, but also who you would like to hear from. If you would like to be a guest on the podcast, you know, you can reach out to me. I really want to make sure that the episodes and the interviews are the as valuable as possible for you, the listener, that can help you build your practice. And whatever pieces are missing, whether it be technology, options, hearing from experts in the industry, hearing about other tools, whatever it may be, I'd love to hear your feedback so we can make sure that the next 40 plus episodes are going to be perfectly geared towards what it is that you're specifically needing in order to, you know, build your practice and offer more affordable services to your clients, unbundled and otherwise. So for the feedback, please send us an email to podcast@unbundledattorney.com. Again, podcast, P-O-D-C-A-S-T @unbundledattorney.com. And let us know if you know who you'd like to have on the show. If you'd like to be a guest, feel free to email us as well, or any feedback, suggestions, or ideas for any future episodes. We'd love to make sure we can tailor it to what you're specifically interested in. Today, we're interviewing Robert Buchanan, again, who's our provider attorney out of Chicago, Illinois. And we have cover some really, really important topics. Number one, we cover partnership. He originally went into a partnership with another provider, another attorney that did not work out. And there were some very specific reasons for that. You know, they were actually not really well suited for each other from the beginning in the sense of what they're both bringing to the practice. And so we have a really good discussion on how to decide if you want to, you know, bring on a partner in your practice and the reasons why you'd want to and the reasons why it wouldn't necessarily make sense. We also talk a lot about automation and email autoresponders. He uses some tools like Zapier and a couple others to automatically continue to maintain the relationship with his clients over the long term without necessarily him having to do that himself. He's got systems to do so using email autoresponders. The one he uses is Drip. We talk about Lexicata and MailChimp as well, so that all those folks that, you know, you never get on the phone or come in the office and don't quite make that decision, you know, you don't necessarily have time to, you know, keep following up and keep calling them yourself, but you can start to develop systems with email where you can continue to maintain that communication with them automatically using some of these tools. So I really take some time to get into the nitty-gritty details of like how you can go about setting this up. We've also made a commitment on this episode to start to create a relationship with an email management company that can help you with building out these emails and these systems so you can start to maintain relationship with your clients long-term automatically. And some other things as well, including hiring an associate versus hiring contract lawyers and much more. So let's get right into it. This episode with Robert Buchanan, one of our provider attorneys in Chicago, Illinois. All right. Hey, Robert, welcome to the show.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah, man, as we were just discussing here, we've got officially a year under the belt as of 4 or 5 days ago of working together here. So seems like an anniversary we're celebrating, and I'm really looking forward to catching up on how this past year has been and hearing more about how things have been going.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm excited to, you know, have gone from where I started at, and a year later, I'm definitely, you know, I've seen substantial growth in my firm, and yeah, it's exciting. Every day is exciting. So I'm glad to be with you and excited to talk about it.
Yeah. So that's probably a good place to start, is maybe we can talk about, you know, where you were at a year from now and a year ago, and maybe just give a bit of your background, you know, when you got the start of the practice of law and, you know, the area and the region you serve, and then maybe talk a little bit about where you're at when we first started working together and bring us to where things stand now, maybe the short list, and then we can dive into some of the details.
Yeah, absolutely. So come this November 1st, I'll be licensed 5 years. I practice out of Chicago, and I went to law school here. So I graduated in 2012, and shortly after I graduated, I started working for a private criminal defense attorney, and he did a little bit of family law as well. And I was driving all over the place. I think there's 6 different suburban courthouses in Cook County. And I was going from one to another and covering multiple things and just really staying busy, but quickly started getting that feeling that I could be I could make more money and be working a little bit less if I had more had my own practice. So I think after about a year working with him, a good friend of mine asked me if I wanted to partner up with him, and I said, sure, why not? Let's jump off this cliff together. And so I started practicing with him. And then about, I think, a year, maybe a year plus after being with him, I started to feel that our visions weren't the same, and started really wanting to take control of my own destiny, if you will. And I told him that I wanted to go off and do my own thing. So I started my own practice.
Could I stop you there real quick? I want to continue, but maybe you could stop and just share for attorneys that have considered bringing on partners in a firm. Obviously, you had a relationship that didn't end up working out. So maybe you could share a little bit about some of the possible pitfalls of having a partnership and the way things can go different directions, and maybe some discussions you may want to have, or discussions you wish you maybe should have had at the outset that may have prevented, or anything that you learned from that process.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It's funny, because when he asked me to be his partner, he asked me if I wanted to do it with him. I'd actually just read a blog post talking about how having a partner is a bad idea and there should be a strategic reason for doing it. But I kind of ignored it, thinking, this is somebody who I think I have a lot in common with. We obviously get along socially. And this is, it's a scary thing to kind of go off on your own. So let's do it together. What the biggest pitfall, I think, is that there needs to be a discussion beforehand about where, what each person is going to be responsible for and kind of what strengths they bring, and talking about the vision in general and really aligning what the vision is and figuring out whether or not it makes sense strategically. And I think for the most part, most attorneys partner up for not very good reasons. They just want to practice with somebody else. And what happened, what I started feeling, was that I was really passionate about the marketing. I was really passionate about automation and using technology, and we could talk about that a little bit more. And, ultimately I felt like I was bringing more value to the practice. Whether or not that was accurate or not, I don't know. But if that sort of feeling starts to arise in one person, it's not going to work out. And especially when you're starting out, it's a struggle, period. Neither one of us had a book of business. I mean, we were just trying to keep the lights on, literally. And that adds a lot of stress. So, the most difficult thing was that neither one of us had, there was no real synergy, if you will. And, so we were losing a lot in efficiency. When you have partner, what you lose a lot of is efficiency in making decisions, because you have to talk to the other person on a lot of decisions, where now that I'm on my own, I just think it through. I might get some input from a colleague or a business coach, and then I make the decision. And there was a lot of wasted time and communication, I felt, when I had the partner.
Right, exactly. And that's a really huge point, where you can, if you, as a business owner, if you want to pivot, or you see a marketing opportunity, or you see a new way to structure your practice, you can, like you said, put some thought into it, think it through, and make sure it's a good decision, but then immediately implement if it makes sense to you, right? And that's actually part of one of the main reasons we work with a lot of small firms and solo practitioners, is because, maybe they haven't offered unbundled legal services before, but we can have a couple conversations, We can give them some training, give them some podcast episodes, and then they can make the decision. You say, you know what? This makes sense. I can see how we can serve more clients. I can see how we can do it profitably. Let's do it. And then actually implement it like straight away.
Right.
Whereas, you know, if you talk to a firm where the, you know, the lead counsel or the partner, oh, that really makes sense for them to be able to transition the firm to offering those types of services. And they'd have to train that down through 10 different associates, implement new systems. And, you know, it's just like a tanker that's been going in one direction for a long time. Takes a while to get that thing to turn. And so, you know, it's really, and especially nowadays with the internet and how many different things are, the marketplace has changed and evolving, you know, it can be pretty beneficial to be able to be light of foot and to adjust accordingly in the at a high rate of speed.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that that's why I have been able to be successful, you know, using your leads, using leads from other sources, is because I can figure out what I want to try, see what works, and iterate from there. And I don't have to confer with anybody else. Things, you know, do get a little bit more difficult. I brought on an associate about 4 months ago, so I have some extra cost there. But I'm still, you know, I think I know I'm still growing at a certain rate and it's still working. And I think a big part of that is me being so close, to the service I'm delivering as well. And being able to, you know, I'm on the front lines, I'm doing the sales, figuring out what works and going from there.
Yeah. And I think you said, yeah, exactly. And there's one other piece you mentioned earlier that I thought was really valuable, which is making sure that a partnership is strategic as opposed to, hey, we're good friends, let's do a business, right? You know, it's, you know, you really want to look, this is definitely something that I've learned in my own personal experience, is that, you know, you want to look for a partner that complements your weaknesses, right? So you have, you know, my strength is, you know, sales, marketing, communication, you know, and you know, building a community and these types of things, you know. But what I'm really weak at is technical side. I'm not a developer. I'm not, you know, extremely analytical when it comes to accounting and so forth. And so, you know, I sought a partner that had those skill sets. And so there's that complement of skills, as opposed to, you know, two people that just get along really well and like each other, but, you know, tend to maybe have a similar personality type that doesn't tend to be as conducive for a balanced relationship in a business.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And I found that when I was in my partnership, some of the things that I didn't like doing in particular, he didn't like doing either. And I think if we had really inventoried what our natural strengths were and what we wanted to be doing, we would have seen that we had maybe a little bit too much in common in certain areas where it could have been useful for one of us to have a skill that the other one didn't have. So, you know, you live and you learn. It was a good experience to have. And now I'm, you know, I'm very clear in the fact that I love having my own practice.
Yeah. Awesome. Okay. So appreciate the feedback on that. So you started out your own firm out of this partnership. That was maybe 3-4 years ago. Maybe you can, you know, put us there. And then when we started working together, and then bring us to today.
Yeah, absolutely. So, it would have been probably a year and a half ago that I started my practice. And so you said that I started working with you guys in
September,
about a year ago,
right? End of September 2016.
Yeah. So from when I started my practice, you know, I had a couple clients, you know, a handful that I took from my previous firm, and I was looking at different ways of generating business. I was doing some of my own pay-per-click stuff. I was, you know, networking as much as I could to bring in business, and some of the pay-per-click stuff was definitely working. I mean, it was keeping the lights on, but it was, you know, it gets expensive fast. I mean, you guys are obviously, you know, experts in doing it, but it, you know, for someone like me who, doesn't have much of a background in the pay-per-click, it can get expensive fast and feel like it's getting out of control. At the same time, my big passion from the beginning was automating as much as I could. I early in my career, if you will, it sounds funny saying that, being a lawyer for 5 years, but early in my career, I stumbled upon a automation tool called the Form Tool, which is a Word plugin, Hot Docs is kind of the big player in the field.
Right.
The Form Tool is a product where you can basically program your forms relatively easy without much knowledge in developing really any at all. I started using that very, very early. And so I started developing a library of forms, automating the entire divorce process, starting to automate the custody process. And so I wanted to take that and start turning that into certain services that I could provide. So I started advertising for some flat fee divorce stuff, where I knew that I could get the whole package done, in, you know, like an hour's time, stuff that might take 3 hours or so if it wasn't automated. So I started doing that, putting up my own AdWords ads, and, you know, things were good, but I just felt like they could be better. And then I started working with a kind of in a mastermind group, if you will. And one of the people on there, I believe, was working with you guys. And so then I looked it up. I looked up you guys and signed up and started getting your leads, started really focusing on my sales process. And
that was probably Brian Reedy that was in the mastermind group. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So
yeah, Brian's awesome. He was actually on the podcast earlier, an episode called How to Compete in the DIY Internet Age. Really, really good episode. Oh, breaks down his systems as well. So,
oh, nice. Well, shout out to Brian, and I'll have to listen to his episode sooner rather than later.
Yeah, we were just hanging out with him at Clio. Really good guy, but continue.
Yeah, absolutely. I just saw him in court like a week ago. So I started really focusing on the sales process and really figuring out, you know, what was working, what I could do to, increase conversions as far as getting people, into the office, and then figuring out what was kind of the right retainer amount, that I could charge people. And I started to see the ball roll, and I started to see my my IOLTA account, my trust account, increased. And before I knew it, I kind of had more work than I could handle, and I was losing sleep at night because I was concerned but that I had too much work. So that's kind of the long and short of, you know, how I got to where I am today.
Okay, great. So one of the topics that I think would be really worthwhile to dive into, especially with your interest and passion for it, is automation and forms and streamlining the process. We've talked about this with Michael Chasen from Lexicata, talked about this with a number of other, a few others on the podcast, but it would be really helpful to get into some of the specifics, especially for family law, on the tools and the processes you've developed to speed up the process. And like you said, it really is that difference between 3 hours and 1 hour. And that's one of the main primary reasons that a lot of attorneys don't offer unbundled services or a document preparation flat rate for, you know, $750 or something like that, because it would probably take them 3 hours and plus the time to onboard and enroll the client. Whereas if you have some systems of document of automation that allow you to get these documents and tasks done more efficiently and more quickly, where it only takes you an hour or so, then all of a sudden it has a pretty significant impact on your effective hourly rate. You know, attorneys can start making, you know, if it only takes them an hour of their time or hour and a half even, you know, a $750 flat rate unbundled document preparation can start, you know, netting an effective hourly rate of $500 per hour or even better. So that's pretty good for a high volume, you know, what would be normally considered a low value task. All of a sudden that becomes pretty very, very high value. So maybe you can talk about some of those systems that you've developed and how that's impacted the types of options you can offer to your clients.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think just kind of from a high level, where I'm coming at this, when I do something, is I hate to do something twice that I know that I'll end up doing 10 times. So pretty much in every single area, I'm looking at a way that I can automate it a little bit more, even down to when I'm texting leads, I'm not, you know, I even hate having to like copy and paste the same language that I might put into a response to a lead. So I've started using a text expander on my phone, a nice app that I found. I think it's called Text Expand Pro or something like that, where I have probably a dozen different responses that I can send to leads that come in that are individualized for a certain situation. So everything from that to when a lead comes in I use Zapier.com quite a bit. And I know that you guys are integrated with Lexicata, and I'm not currently using that. And I think that's more just because I have a big infrastructure built up with Zapier.com, where when I have emails come in from a lot of different sources, I use Zapier, which is a tool that pretty much connects APIs from many different cloud-based services, where you can get an email, for example, that has certain information, and for example, your emails, and I can parse that information and shoot it into any other program that I want to. So, for example, the workflow for a lead that comes in from Unbundled, it goes to my drip campaign, so it automatically sends an email to the prospective client saying, hey, you know, thanks for contacting us. If I haven't given you a call, I will, you know, as soon as possible. If you want to schedule a call with me, you can by clicking this link, and that links to Calendly, which probably most people know is an online calendaring app. And then that gets into a follow-up series as well that is about scheduling. And it's also a little bit more about building trust with them, where I'm telling a little bit of my story, a little bit of their story. To, you know, when they ultimately do come into the office and I'm drafting the retainer, that's when I start to use the form tool for the first time in earnest. And the form tool, what it does is, say I have my retainer form and I start getting their basic information, name, address, date of birth, if we're doing a divorce, all the pertinent dates, if there's children involved, the names, the dates of birth of the children, and the retainer is generated. And then I've actually set it up so that I can easily export that data into a Google Sheet. And then once it's in the Google Sheet, kind of your creativity is the limit as far as what you do with that information there. As far as things, you know, apps that you have in the cloud in order to, you know, send off, like they're automatically subscribed, for example, to another email campaign that's for my current and past clients so that I can keep up with them easily. And then as far as the documents themselves, there's probably in Cook County, I want to say that in a typical divorce, there's maybe 10 to 12 separate documents that you have to prepare, 15 if you're including documents that you might be providing as a courtesy to the other side, or documents, correspondence that you might be sending out to your own client. All those documents I've automated, and most of them use, you know, 90% of the same information. So once I have it, I can generate, you know, these 10, 15 documents that are probably a total of 30, 40 pages. And I can do that within about, you know, like I said, an hour's time, and make a nice profit off of an uncontested divorce.
Okay. So yeah, this is really getting at the crux of finding ways to streamline the things that recur over and over. I mean, one of the things about lead generation that's, you know, somewhat beneficial is that the process of receiving a lead, the types of cases you're going to see, types of clients you're going to work with, have their variances in the specific facts and details of the types of the individual circumstances of each client, you know, the kids involved and what happened and what occurred and so forth. But the types of cases overall are somewhat going to be similar across the board day after day, month after month. And so you're in a position where you can start to develop a system over time, gradually iterating and improving on, you know, how you deliver the services one step at a time. And one thing you mentioned that, you know, I'd like to, you know, ask you about is, for example, you have a Zap that takes our unbundled lead form and puts it into either, you know, either your database or something like that. You said you get an email, auto reply email directly to them. And that's actually one thing that I don't think Lexicata has set up yet, where you can just drop an auto reply email immediately. I don't know if you can also do an auto reply text or so forth, but could you describe that Zap that you've created that just sends an auto reply email? And if you're using MailChimp or Constant Contact or AWeber or what email management software you're using to be able to get that email sent out from that Zap directly from the email and unbundled?
Yeah, absolutely. So as all the listeners know, or all the people that work with you, when a lead comes in, you get an email that has a subject, new family lead, colon, and then the name of the prospective client. And then the body of the email contains, and obviously it's coming from the form that people are submitting online, the body of the email contains the pertinent information, first name, last name, phone, a second phone number, an email address, and their issue. So that email is, I set up a filter in Gmail, and it's then sent to what is called an email parser. And that email parser I've set up so that it pulls out the first name, the last name, and it names all those as first name, last name, phone number. And then that information then automatically gets imported into Drip. I use Drip as far as my email follow-ups go. So it gets imported into Drip. It makes them a subscriber of what I've called my Unbundled Attorney campaign. And upon being a subscriber, it fires off the first email to them, which is the one that I described before, that, you know, says, hey, we're here to help you. You know, call us as soon as you can. We'll be calling you. And from that, I would say, probably 10% of those people sign up right away for, you know, to get on my calendar for a phone call. A lot of the other ones, I would say maybe 30% call my answering service. And then I get probably another 20% that are calling after the second or third email, and that's without me even reaching out to them. And that's a big part of my process is, as you guys advise, is, you know, time is of the essence and just calling people immediately. So, but, you know, as is common with a lot of small firms, it's hard to reach out to people all the time. You know, I have court, I have other phone calls, I have meetings, so it's just not always possible. So the automation part of it really makes me be able to do a lot more than I would otherwise.
Yeah. And just to finish these details, I think anyone can create a filter in Gmail just by Googling how to create a filter in Gmail. That's pretty easy. The email parser, is that something that you custom built yourself, or is there a tool you're using to parse out the emails that you're forwarding from Gmail?
That is part of Zapier. So if you get into the automation with something like Zapier, that's one of the tools that they have. So it's basically a separate email box that you have, and you're just filtering a message from Gmail, and it's automatically forwarding all the Unbundled Attorney leads to another email address, and that other email address is the parser itself. So that's, you know, getting into Zapier a little bit more, but that's one of the fundamental tools of Zapier as far as dealing with emails themselves.
Yeah, I know it's not actually that complicated. I appreciate you just kind of isolating it a little bit further. So people just go into Zapier and search email parser. It's a box where you can forward emails to it, and then you can have it parse out the fields, like the name and so forth like that. And then that information, when you have a field that has name or phone or something like that, then that's the kind of information that an email management campaign, you can just set up the fields in the emails so that the emails that go out can be customized, where it'll say, Dear John or Dear Mike, we received your request for help with a child custody in Chicago or this zip code. Like, all the fields that are in our email could then be added, because they're now becoming fields in the email parser, to the email by just putting in the field name in the email. And then as soon as the email is generated, it auto-populates based on that information that's being provided based on that one individual record. That's a little complicated for a lot of people, but I think once you get into Zapier and start working on this stuff, do the email parser, you'll start to see these fields and how they can auto-populate right into the email so that you're sending a customized email without actually clicking a button or doing anything.
Yeah, and it's pretty amazing. I mean, as far as it is very customizable and individualized as far as it's saying, you know, hey, Bob, we got your, you know, request for legal help. And it's amazing how most people think that that is a custom email to them. And most people have no idea that it's automated. I mean, with my my follow-up series where I go into a little bit more, you know, storytelling, if you will. I have people writing me back saying, oh my God, thank you so much for taking the time to share this with me. You know, people just non-marketers, if you will, just, you know, they feel that personal connection, and that's why it really works and it's worthwhile to do.
Okay, great. Thank you for sharing this. When it comes to Zapier and these types of things, it makes me realize that we probably need to do a training on this, and perhaps might even bring in a team that could help with doing some auto-responding emails for attorneys that want to get this set up. Because at this point, you know, for anyone that's using our service, we send an auto-reply email to the client as soon as they submit the request with your contact information. So that happens no matter what. But the next step is for you to start reaching out to them. And so these are ways in which you can do that automatically directly from you. And then obviously, you know, what you're talking about here, Robert, is having a drip series, you know, an autoresponder series. And so this is a way where attorneys can start to send an email on a periodic basis. So as soon as the lead is subscribed, you send the auto reply email. And then you can, I don't know if you shift it to a new list or whatever, what exactly how you're doing it, but then you can send some pre-written emails that are very specific to their situation, that to the client feels like, hey, you know, Robert's just sending me an email to give me some details on this stuff. But, you know, a lot of these things can be pre-written in advance, and then they're getting regular communications from you, you know, weekly or every few days or whatever you set up, so that, you know, for those folks that you don't get a hold of right away, or you talk to them and they need some time to make a decision, or they say, I want to think about it, or they have to wait to respond, you can maintain communication with these clients consistently without having to do so yourself personally each time. So could you elaborate on that just a little bit, Robert, as far as how that's impacted your practice and the way you have that set up?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of the other areas that I was thinking about when you were talking was when someone comes into the office, and or if it just happens over the phone, but we get to the place where I am giving them a retainer agreement and they're not quite ready to sign up at that point. You know, they have to go there on their own way and think about it. And I want to stay on their radar. They are already in my system, and all I have to do is tag them in drip, and they get switched over to what I call my retainer follow-up series. And it sends them an email, immediately saying, hey, you know, if you're ready to get started, just, you know, sign the retainer and you can make a payment here. And I have a payment link in there. And then I think maybe 3 or 4 days later, it sends them another email that says, you know, just wondering if you have any questions. I'm here to answer any of your questions. I'm available. And then, you know, 3 or 4 days later, sends them another one. And then maybe, you know, if the lead's getting a little bit cold, about 2 weeks later, I send them, say, one that says, hey, just wondering if I should keep my file open for you. You know, let me know if you have further questions, and just kind of down the line like that. And I definitely see people responding to that and communicating with me, and people tell me, oh yeah, you know, definitely want to hire you. I'm just getting the money together. Or, you know, they're saying, I just don't think the time is right now, but I want to stay in touch, or whatever it is. But I know that, they're staying connected with my firm, and they're not starting to shop elsewhere, because as we all know, you know, it's competitive, especially in Chicago. I think there's like 50,000 lawyers here. So creating that relationship and maintaining it is extremely important. And being able to leverage those kind of tools to do it is key.
Yeah, it's really, really important. And just for the users of Lexicata, they also have an integration with MailChimp, where if you're working for Lexicata and you do a meetup and you meet with a client, and let's say they don't enroll right then, you can just add a tag in Lexicata that automatically creates the tag in MailChimp and just adds them to that list that you've created. It's the same thing if it's an uncontacted, you can just tag that as uncontacted in Lexicata. That will then add them to an uncontacted list that you could create in MailChimp and follow up in that way. And for attorneys, you know, I think it's important to imagine that you're talking to clients every single day, and they're, you know, you're not getting a hold of some folks, or they're not enrolling with you for whatever reason. There's a lot of different reasons why they may not get started with you today. But every day, there's people that you talked to a week ago, 2 weeks ago, a few days ago, months ago, and you're getting emailed from these clients saying, that just got your email from 2 weeks ago. You met with 2 weeks ago. They got your email today from your automated follow-up series that's calling you, sending you a message saying, hey, because they just got an email from you that was automatically sent 2 weeks later, which is now today, saying, hey, just checking in. Do you want me to keep the file? And they're saying, hey, man, I'm still serious, but I want to move forward. And you were just doing some other task and you're getting responses from clients, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It starts to feel, I mean, once you got like the system in place, it starts to feel pretty cool because you're going, you know, you're not even doing anything and you're getting people contacting you. Or what happens is I had a guy, I think I talked to him maybe, you know, let's say 6 months ago. And then I open up my email and I have a transaction in my LawPay for $2,500 that I, you know, wasn't, I had, he was completely off my radar. And then, you know, you make the sale without doing anything. So that starts to feel real cool when you can get that stuff going.
Yeah, absolutely. And so you have like this follow-up system where you're sending every few days, then maybe a week later, then 2 weeks later, hey man, you know, this is kind of just reaching out. Want to know if you let me know if you want me to keep the file open. It's going to be my final email. At that point, do you also will then at a certain point transition them onto more of a general tips and suggestions type of sequence, or do you like a newsletter style so that, you know, they can keep you top of mind for months from there? I mean, how far do you take that at this stage?
Yeah. You know, I would say the more, the kind of the follow up, for the retainer right now, I have it running, just for about 2 weeks. You know, I could easily, with about, you know, 15, 20 minutes of time, expand that to, you know, a month or two. And obviously when you start getting further out, you don't need to keep pestering them. What I do is I'm also running them on the same campaign that's a little bit more, like a tips or a newsletter, if you will. So that once the retainer follow up runs out, they continue to get kind of just those weekly or semi-weekly emails, that are meant to just keep them in the loop and keep building authority and trust with them.
Yeah. And so are those emails that you've pre-written? So do you have maybe 12 months or 24 months of emails you've pre-written, or do you also just do kind of a broadcast each month? Like what are those emails that are, that what comprises those emails that are just, you know, the monthly or weekly or, you know, whatever it is, maybe you can share the frequency and so forth of just, you know, keeping in touch with clients. So you're staying top of mind, you know, months or even years later.
Yeah, I would say in general, I mean, it's a little bit more when they first when I first get their information, but I start to break it out to be about one per week. Right now, I have just about 6 months in my system. But those emails, what I try to do is, those emails are, and I'm a big believer in the more authentic you can be in your marketing messages, the more people will connect with it. So a lot of them are pretty personal stories to me, stuff I've gone through. And I tend to write them when I have some sort of moment in my life that is, you know, emotionally charged one way or the other, because I think that that's where some of our best writing and communicating comes from, is when we can convey that sort of experience to somebody else. So that's where I kind of write my kind of the stuff that are more focused on me personally, so people can get to know kind of who I am, what I believe in, what my principles are. And then I would say half of the emails are where I'm telling their story. And that talks, you know, those are inspired by moments that I have in court or with clients, where I'm starting to see something recur, or I see that a client had a revelation in a certain way or went through something, or, you know, a lesson was learned. And so I kind of build a story out of that. And that's what the essence of my emails are. You know, try to make them real, try to make them useful. I mean, I always put some sort of like, you know, here's your takeaway, here are your tips, but always rooted in some sort of true experience. And in my experience, that's what people connect with the most, the easiest.
Yeah. Yeah. And do you find a lot of people responding to those emails and checking in with you months later from people you talk to? I mean, we've been working for a year, so you're getting leads every single day, and you've been doing that for months and months and months. So do you get a consistent number of, you know, responses to your emails on either daily or weekly basis?
Yeah, certainly. I would say that You know, I get people that probably got into my funnel 6 months prior, 9 months prior, even I've seen. And it goes all along the spectrum from one to 9 months. Cause everybody, you have no idea when you're, meeting people in their own process. And especially when you're doing family law, cause it is so emotional. You know, people might start really searching for an attorney in earnest during a particular, you know, blow up with a spouse or with the parent of their child, and then things might cool down the next day and they say, oh no, you know, I can live with this for a little bit longer. And then it happens again, say 3 months later. And then they're like, okay, you know, enough is enough. And now I'm going to reach out and hire the attorney. So yeah, the answer is I see people responding all the time to these emails. And then, a certain percentage of them, I couldn't really say at this point, but of the people that respond, that'll start up an actual conversation where I'm replying back, asking them about their case, inviting them to give me a call. And then, you know, they'll come into the office and someone will hire me that I first connected with, you know, 6 months before that.
Wow. Yeah, this is such an important topic. I think as a result of this conversation, we've been considering doing this for a long time, as, you know, creating a relationship with an email broadcast company, or, you know, management company that can help with, because, you know, for a lot of attorneys, this is a really valuable sequence. Some lawyers have the technical know-how to set up the email autoresponders, others don't. And it is a skill set that takes some time to learn. And obviously, right, this is something you've worked on for many years and are kind of geared towards it. But many attorneys aren't. So as a result of this, I think what we'll do is we'll create a relationship with an email broadcast company, have a couple of friends in the internet marketing industry that could put something like this together and help attorneys to make the transition to having these email autoresponders, because it's such a huge value to be able to continue to maintain the relationships with each client, you know, months from now, years from now. I used to do that, you know, back in the days when I worked in the legal access plan. I would have an email I would send out, you know, once a month, once every couple months. And inevitably, we would get, you know, 5, 10, 15 people responding to those emails, say, hey, Dave, you know, thanks for this email. I definitely still want to get this done. Give me a call. And I would, and those, you know, honestly, when they've responded to those emails, to me, that was a really, really hot lead. That was someone that converted into, you know, enrolling in the services we offered back then. And certainly for, if you're an attorney, enrolling in your services right then, because like you said, they're in those moments where they have enough motivation, either because of the something they're experiencing or problems that they're having, or challenges they're facing, where they're in a motivated and empowered place to take action. And so that, the value of being able to continue to maintain that communication in an automated fashion, because there's just no way to do it, to follow up with leads from 6 months ago, you know, with an email each month. It wouldn't be cost effective, because the response rate is only maybe, less than 10%. That's just not a good use of time if you had to do it personally. But if you can do it in an automated fashion, you know, that's going to make it worthwhile.
Yeah, absolutely. Without a doubt. I mean, it's one of those things that I keep expanding on and figuring out how to use it better, because it's absolutely a good investment of time for any attorney who's serious about, you know, growing their business.
Okay, awesome. So I will keep everyone posted. We'll send an email out to you, letting you know when we have, you know, some kind of an organization that can help with getting these email autoresponders together. I will start working on that right away. So keep everyone posted on that. I'd love to switch gears a little bit. In our discussions, you're talking a little bit more about how you started to offer more unbundled service options. Maybe you can just talk about what you shared, maybe the majority of clients you find are retaining you for, and then also how you're starting to adapt to offer unbundled more often for at least the initial starting phase of working with folks.
Yeah, absolutely. So as far as I would say, I don't know, 75% of the unbundled leads that do hire my firm probably are paying anywhere between $1,500 and $2,500 for an initial retainer. But what I do is talk to them about the fact that their case is probably going to cost more than that amount. And that we need to set up some sort of payment plan per month as far as them financing the legal services. So I do everything I can to make it clear to them that this isn't a flat fee monthly, but rather they are making a minimum monthly payment towards their outstanding balance. And that certainly works for a large percentage of my clients. The tricky part for me is figuring out how much can I afford to be the bank, if you will, and afford to finance their legal services. And that requires, the one thing that I do is I put in my retainer that there's a certain cap between, say, $1,500 and $3,000, that if they get to that amount that they owe my firm, there has to be a renegotiation of what the agreement is, because I can't allow people to get, you know, to owing me $5,000, $10,000, because it just doesn't work from a cash flow perspective. So that's kind of the model that I use for the majority of clients. But I would say in the last month or two, I've been experimenting more with unbundled services in the realm of specifically, and it's mostly dads looking for visitation, some sort of parenting time agreement when they haven't seen their child in a while, or the other parent just recently is saying you can't see the kid for XYZ reason. And I'll have that potential client on the phone, and they will, and I'll give them three options. I'll say, do you either want, we can offer you our full representation. It's more of a traditional model where we are charging you by the hour, and we require a $3,000 retainer for that. Or we can do a flat fee of $1,500, and that'll cover two court dates. And on the first court date, we will try to negotiate with the other parent a temporary parenting plan. We'll ask the court to refer your case to mediation. And if we cannot negotiate a parenting plan, or excuse me, a parenting time schedule on that first court date, we'll ask the court to set it for a hearing. And I'll explain that a hearing is when the judge can make a decision on that, because they're not allowed to make a decision on the first court date. And I'll say, you know, we'll be there for the hearing. We'll have a hearing, and the judge will order temporary parenting time schedule. And that's a $1,500 flat fee. And at that point, our job will be done. What you paid us to do will be done. And we can either get out of the case, or we can negotiate what we're going to do for the next leg, if you will. And what our firm does in order to cover ourselves is we file, and I'm sure there's an equivalent in every state, or most every state, but a limited scope appearance, which allows us to get out of the case with much more ease than if we're filing a regular appearance. And then the third option that I give people is just coaching and document drafting. And this is where those two options is where the form automation comes into play big time, because we're able to pump out the templates that we have, modify them a bit based on their particular circumstance, but getting those documents ready for the client takes much less time, and we're just able to be more profitable. So I'm really excited about starting to offer that service more and continuing to offer it, because I think it's definitely going to add to the bottom line quite a bit.
Yeah, and then you mentioned something earlier that I thought was valuable, which is the amount of involvement you have in a case. You know, when you start off unbundled, some of them, you know, Anthony Sanders was on the podcast on the most previous episode, the Try It Before You Buy It enrollment strategy, where he offers the unbundled service first, and he finds that 90% of the clients, after they use the unbundle, will retain him for additional services from there, whether it be more unbundled services or full rep. And so, you know, it's a nice way for people to get to know his firm, get comfortable working with him, and offer something as a solution. But also for those that don't, it limits the amount of involvement that he's going to have in the case. He can get the documents done and out the door, that's been delivered on an unbundled service, and the client proceeds from there. And whether they proceed with you or not, it stands alone, and you don't necessarily have to get involved in the entire case. Maybe you can talk a little bit more about that.
Yeah, absolutely. There's so much of this in getting people to buy that or retain you for a larger part of the case has to do with them getting to know your firm and starting to trust you. And that's certainly something, you know, that we see on a regular basis is someone will hire us for you know, this finite service. And then 9 times out of 10, it turns into something more. And then the other aspect of it, as I was talking with you earlier on the phone, is the fact that I think that, you know, what we do as family law attorneys is incredibly stressful, and it's stressful for the attorneys. It's stressful for the client. And unbundled services is a very cool way to kind of limit the stress for the attorney, because it's kind of like there is a limit on the relationship, if you will, between the attorney and the client, and the client doesn't have this expectation of you are going to fix their entire life, if you will, which can start to happen when you're in these representation where you represent a client for say 2-3 years. It can kind of take on a whole different flavor. So, and that's good. You know, now that I have an associate, I'm always worried about his stress level. So those are the sorts of things that I'm thinking about as well.
Yep, absolutely. And that brings me to one other topic we wanted to cover here, is that you did hire an associate. You got to the point where you mentioned your IELTS CAM was filling up, but you're also getting more work than you can handle. And so you decided to bring on an associate. What did that hiring process look like? Maybe you can share a little bit about how that's structured. I'm not sure if you're paying by the hour or salary, and how you came to decide on the way that was structured, and how that's been going for you thus far.
Yeah, absolutely. So I hired him, I think, about 4 months ago, and it was a very organic process, actually. We were both mentees in the Chicago Bar Association's mentor-mentee program in the family law group. And so I got to know him through, meeting, you know, I think it was once a month. We went out for lunch just to kind of learn about each other as colleagues, in the community. And during that time, my practice was going through that growth, and I was really starting to feel like I needed to take somebody else on. And so we started talking about that possibility, and just had different conversations about whether or not that would be a contract relationship where I'm paying him X amount of dollars per hour. And there's always a decision to make whether that's going to be, are you paying this person for each billable hour that they work, or just each hour that they work? And then I was thinking, can I afford to pay this person a salary? Because there's always a little bit more risk with a salary, because it doesn't matter how much money you take in or how much work you have for them. You got to, you know, give them that salary. I ultimately, my offer to him was a salaried position. I think that that's, you know, a personal choice as far as where you see your firm going and what you're trying to build. For me, I really wanted to start being kind of the leader or the CEO of you, if you will, of my firm, and start building a culture. And, you know, it's easy to build a culture when there's only two of us, but certainly, when you have someone salaried, I think they feel there's more stability there, and they feel like you're really investing in them. So, you know, it's been, the last 4 months has been great. I have a good friend who I talk business with, and he keeps telling me that I'm really lucky to have found someone who, you know, has brought so much value to my firm, and who's such a good employee, because I think it is very difficult to find good people. So that's going to be certainly a challenge going forward when I look at hiring my next associate, which I hope to do, honestly, in the next 6 months or so. We'll see.
Yeah, it's something that we've had a number of guests come on the podcast. Rhonda and Jayshree Naidu have hired, I think, 10 associates now, opened up a new practice office in Tulsa and Oklahoma City. We're actually going to have them back on the show probably in the next few, you know, couple of weeks here to share, you know, kind of part two of the growth. We talked to them last year, and they were just opening up the Tulsa office, and since then, I think they've hired 10 new associates. So I'll be sure to ask them, you know, some more questions. Maybe they can elaborate on what that process has looked like and any strategies or tips they would have for hiring an associate. They certainly covered that in the first episode. It's called Scaling Up Your Practice, How to Expand from Solo Practitioner to Small Firm in Under 3 Months, or something like that. You can look for it on the I'm an Attorney website under podcast, and you can find that episode. Really valuable for those of you that are looking into, you know, especially when you're getting a lot of leads, a lot of clients, can't necessarily handle it all yourself, considering hiring an associate. We have episodes on hiring contract lawyers and that type of relationship. And you can start to think about what type of relationship might work best for your individual firm. So I appreciate your thoughts on that. One final thing I think would be interesting to cover, because you're in a unique situation. You're covering Cook County. And this is, you know, one of the, you know, I think the largest or second largest, LA County might be slightly bigger, but I'm not sure. I mean, they're both huge counties. You think you mentioned there's six different courts. Can you just talk about what has been, you know, the challenge, and also what you found to be most successful in working in a large county, serving a diverse, very diverse number of different types of clients, and how you've been able to be effective at doing that in that type of a region?
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the biggest challenges in working in such a large county is just the vast number of judges that you'll be working before, the vast number of attorneys that will be opposing counsel, and kind of just getting used to the fact that you often go into situations where you've never been before this judge before, or you've never worked with this opposing counsel before, and just getting comfortable with that, that alone. And then as far as the clientele that you serve, you do get people, from, you know, all parts of the spectrum contacting you. And I think that that's been the most difficult part about kind of figuring out exactly what services to provide and figuring out what models of unbundled representation are going to work the best. Because it is clear that there's so much business to be had in Cook County, that it's just a matter of finding the right business model and iterating and doing what you need to do to increase profitability. Kind of on a personal note, I think the toughest part of going to court in Cook County is going into the Daly Center, which is the main courthouse downtown Chicago. And it is literally rush hour at, you know, 9:30 in the morning, and the elevators are packed, and, everybody is rushing off to where they need to go, and just kind of getting comfortable and finding yourself in that environment. For me, what the sales process, the marketing, the developing the automation and all that, that's really my passion. And my goal is to actually completely get out of going to court. And my associate loves to go to court. And I think there's most attorneys, you know, they become attorneys to practice, and they want to practice. And that's a benefit to, you know, somebody like myself who says, you know what, I really like building the business here and developing these systems more than anything. And I think the volume of people in Cook County and the amount of business there is going to allow me to grow my practice to the level where if I don't want to go into court, I don't have to. I'm not quite there yet, but, you know, give me 2 or 3 months.
Yeah. Well, and this ties perfectly back to the beginning of our conversation when it comes to partnership and building a firm.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't even necessarily have to be partnership, but, you know, how do you hire? Who do you work with? Who do you look for? And what aspect of the business are you most inclined to work towards? We have a lot of attorneys that love doing the initial calls, you know, love, you know, enrolling clients and it's beginning the relationship, but like don't want to go to court. And then we have other attorneys that love to go to court and really want to bring on someone that can do the calls, you know? And there's a lot of other roles in between. So, you know, finding what that truth is for you, there's a really good book. I haven't read the one, it's called E-Myth Revisited. I think it's called the E-Myth something. I think it's E-Myth Revisited or E-Myth something.
There's E-Myth. One written specifically for lawyers, right? Yeah. Yeah, there is.
Yeah, and it talks about building a business. Maybe you can look it up while we're on the line, but really good book. I read the one that's not specifically for lawyers, and it talks a lot about the different hats you wear the primary hat when you run a solo practitioner office and you're being a self-employed, what he calls technician, where you're doing all everything. You know, and he tells a story about, you know, a baker, you know, that, you know, worked in a bakery, loved making cakes, but then she started her own bakery and then had all these new tasks involved with, which are involved in running a practice. And so, you know, she had to build systems and figure out where she, her talents are best used and hire people to help her with the things that she's not as inclined towards. You know, and if she, and there was a story about how she didn't, and she started to lose her passion for baking cakes because she found herself having to do all these other things that she really doesn't, you know, and didn't enjoy. And so it's really a really, really good book. I'd be curious to hear, you know, anyone's feedback on the blog when we post this episode. If those, anyone that's read that book, E-Myth for Lawyers, I think is there's a version of it. I should really check it out. But really starting to think about, you know, what aspects, you know, you're building a business now, you're a business owner, you have to think differently, you have to think like an entrepreneur and start to think of, and it brings to the surface the opportunity to carve out your ideal practice in which you're doing the things that you love to do and then potentially having others doing the things that are not as conducive to your skill set or not the things that you much enjoy that other people, you know, would love. That would be their art, you know. And so that's an opportunity to start doing that, which it sounds like you've been exploring with the associate, and sounds like it's working well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I love being a business owner and an entrepreneur and really creating the job that I've always wanted. And it's a process. It's stressful sometimes, but I wouldn't exchange it for anything. Well, that's not quite true, but it's awesome.
Yep. All right. Well, hey, Robert, this has been just an unbelievably valuable episode, especially our discussions on email and automation and unbundled services. I'm really looking forward to hearing more about your evolution on offering unbundled services. Certainly check out that episode I talked to you about. We talked about that earlier. I think that'll be really valuable. And then also talk to us. You know, you can speak with me, Graham, or any other members of our team, and we come up with a lot of ideas and give you some suggestions of what's worked really well for other attorneys as far as unbundled services. So, but definitely appreciate your feedback there and for coming on the show and taking the time and being so helpful. So thank you so much.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. I had a great time.
Okay. So with that, we will go ahead and wrap up this episode. For those of you, for all you that are listening, we certainly appreciate you taking part in the podcast and learning and applying all these tools and technology. I understand that some of the stuff can be pretty overwhelming. You know, these tools, you know, have a learning curve and take some time to implement. But, you know, when you're, you know, every day making little improvements daily to your practice, they tend to make massive differences over time. It's the concept of Kaizen. Japanese automakers implemented this practice many, many, many years ago. And it's the concept of small daily improvements eventually lead to huge advantages. And from a standpoint of automation and these types of tools, especially as solo practitioners in small firms, you can start to get a lot more done in a lot less time. So really, thank you for taking the time and energy to build out more efficient practices. And until next time, we will see you all on the next episode. Bye for now. For more information about how our lead generation services can help you grow your practice, visit our website at www.unbundledattorney.com. And if you're enjoying this podcast, please be sure to subscribe so you get each new episode as soon as it's available and leave us a rating and review on iTunes. Once again, thanks for listening.